Hey everyone, thank you for listening to another episode of Spoiler Force Podcast. You can find more episodes on any podcasting platform such as Apple Podcast, Spotify, Amazon, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe and make sure to follow Spoiler Force Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch.
Hey everybody, this is Lucy Christian and you are listening to Spoiler Force Podcast. Go beyond plus ultra!
So this is episode 93 of Spoiler Force Podcast. My name is Ricky and thank you for tuning in. This week's guest is someone I am so happy to have, my very first My Hero Academia voice actress on the podcast here. But not only that, she's had roles in One Piece, Parasite the Maxim, Full Metal Alchemist, 20 years of experience, which is amazing to see someone who is still working in this voice acting industry like this. So let me introduce my guest here, powerhouse Lucy Christian. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. That is the nicest introduction.
Yay. I made sure to like kind of not study everything, but just to kind of pinpoint the stuff that really stood out. I got to say this. One Piece is one of the longest running anime and manga right now. Yeah. So I know you'll have that job for quite a while as Nami.
It should go on for just a little while. I mean, I remember them saying, so this is going to be a long job. You know, everybody wanted to be in it because it's got a gazillion episodes. And I remember thinking, I mean, yeah, because how long can it be? And it's been, I don't know, what, 11 years, 12 years, and we're not done. We're not close to being done.
Yeah, I think the last time I heard anything was that, because I'm not too big on One Piece, but then I know that it is one of the big animes out there. The last thing I heard was like the writer saying that he was only just about a little over halfway. So I don't even like over 1,000 manga chapters. And I was like, that's only halfway. That's, oh my God, I don't even know what to expect from that. Because, you know, Luffy and the gang, they just keep going into different islands and different routes. And then there's so many side movies now too. Yeah. So like there's just so much content with that lore. And each character, I mean, they're practically historic. And, you know, One Piece being up there with, like, the likes of Naruto and Bleach, Dragon Ball Z, it's still one of those, I guess you could call it old school now versus what's coming out today. But it's still there at the top.
Yeah, I think so. And it's kind of cool, I think, for those shows that have so many episodes, it's kind of neat that you get to see the evolution of like the art over time and everything. I mean, One Piece and especially like the movies and stuff look so different than, you know, episodes 1 through 100.
Yeah, I know so many. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, I remember when we were dubbing Gold, I think, we were just like, ooh, it's so pretty. Look at the pretty animation. It looks so good. And it's just really cool. I mean, aside from getting to follow characters through so many arcs and so much growth, which is very rare, the show itself has just come such a long way in so many ways. I don't know if any of us expected that it would sort of go happen like it has, like lasted this long. Crazy.
Yeah, you know, you brought up the whole animation part. Like, I have friends who are really into One Piece, and when you hear like newer, I guess newbie anime watchers watch One Piece and try to start off with that, since it's one of the classics, they're like, "Oh my God, the animation's so bad!" For like the first, like you said, the first couple hundred episodes, until it gets more modern with the animation, and it's kind of like going back and watching like Dragon Ball or so, like old school Dragon Ball versus where it's at now. So you just gotta kind of ride through those waves, I guess you could say, and then just get to where they're at.
Yeah. But
besides One Piece, though, and your work with My Hero Academia, which we will be talking about later on, is by far not just one of my favorites, but overall, just the both English and sub of My Hero Academia. I do want to let fans know, like, when I first watched My Hero, I was about, I started at season 3. That's when I finally gave that a chance. And my cousin just kept telling me, you should watch this. It's so good. It's different from all the Marvel DC stuff. Because at that time, that's where Marvel was peaking with their movies. And so, you know, with that superhero genre, it just didn't seem so appealing to me until I gave it a chance. And now, especially with today too, like everything's just kind of coming full circle for me. I'm reading the manga for My Hero Academia, and I don't want to spoil anything, even though, you know, it's Spoiler Force podcast. It's so good. And
it is good. You
know, seeing the growth of Ochako from the beginning of the series till now, even to where they're at in the manga, I absolutely adore her character. And you bring her such justice, especially in the second movie where her and Sarah work together to fight Nine. And I just love everything about My Hero. I'm such a big old nerd about it, like kind of like Izuku a little bit, you know, just a big old nerd about it. I love it so much.
Well, I love that. It's, you know, it's a show worthy of fandom. That's one of the best things about being a part of it is I think we're all just really stoked to be a part of such a great show. And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I love Ochako. I feel like she could really easily be just the good girl. But they've given her enough interesting things and she has her own arc. You know, I really got a kick out of in the beginning when she was just like, I just want to do it for the money. I'm very practical. And she's so practical. But then that time comes where she, what is it in season four, I guess, when she's like, you know what? I want to save people. Like I want to be a hero because I want to save people. And so she has her own thing. But yeah, I love that movie. So a cool thing is when we watched that movie, we were in LA at the premiere. It was right before the pandemic hit. And I mean, that place was packed with all these fans and there was so much cosplay and it was so much fun. So much of the cast was there. I hadn't even met some of the cast before. And it was so electric. Like I've never experienced anything like that in my professional life. It was so cool. And I was so proud. And when Ochako does that, when she like levitates or floats all of that stuff and throws it at Nine, and her voice cracks when she's saying plus yes. Ultra, dude, I got shivers. I was so proud. And it was just so cool. So flipping cool.
You know, I gotta say, Lucy, like, for my listeners and viewers, they know that I'm, you know, with the whole sub versus dub, I'm more sub, yeah. but My Hero is a huge exception because all of you, the cast, everyone kind of tweaked and changed my mind a little bit. Because you know what's funny is the first time I ever watched My Hero dubbed was the first movie. I bought the wrong tickets. So I went in and was thinking like, all right, I'm going to watch the sub and enjoy the movie. And then the English dub starts kicking in. I'm like, oh, crap. I don't know if I should walk out or like, I'm already in here and there's fans in here. The theater is packed. I didn't want to just give up my seat. I had a good seat. So I'm like, you know, I'm just going to stick it out. And, you know, the more I watch it, the more I kind of just, you know, kind of learn how to not compare the two so much, especially with My Hero.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, especially with that first movie and the second movie, like you and the cast won me over with the English dub. All of you guys do phenomenal jobs. And
Thank you. Yeah. I feel like Colleen did a really fantastic job of casting the show. Because I feel like, I mean, the Japanese is the first thing we hear. So we're fans of the Japanese too. I think that's one of the funnier things in the sub versus dub universe is voice actors don't really look at it that way. Like we're not competing with the Japanese. We certainly don't feel like we are. They're the first thing I hear in my ear when I'm recording. So I take my cues off of what they do and we all have like mutual admiration society totally with doing all of that. But yeah. I'm so glad that won you over. That made me think. So when I went to see Boy and the Beast in the theater, I bought the wrong tickets. So I watched it in Japanese. And I was like, oh, it's so good. Now I have to go figure out where the English dub is so I can see whatever I did.
I spoke with Adam MacArthur, who does the voice of Itadori Yuji from Jujutsu Kaisen. And he had a great point, too. Like the skill set it takes to kind of warp the words from Japanese to English, you have to fit those puzzle pieces right or else the mouth movements are wrong. And I never really took that into like a chord of just watching English dub or listening to it. Yeah, the nuances are different. The way how we phrase things or speak things, it's different from how the Japanese does it. But you know, you got to give credit to the English actors for even attempting to do something like that, because I'm pretty sure the average person cannot do that. I know I couldn't do that. So, and well, so to bring character life like that, you guys are doing it great.
I'll tell you, it really is a totally different skill set. I remember back the first time I was in a studio doing dubbing, straight up, I thought I was horrible, and I probably was. It was so weird trying to figure out, do I look at the script? Do I look at the, animation? Do I look at the flap? I didn't know what to do. It's very, very weird trying to match the flaps. So especially for new people, I'm always like, there's such a learning curve with it that requires some bravery. You're not going to learn how to do it unless you just do it and sort of risk looking a fool and messing up a lot. But that's how you learn to dub.
I mean, you have like 20 years of experience of this art form and this skill.
I do.
Now, for the listeners who don't, or viewers who don't know as well, can you kind of take it back a little bit and just kind of briefly talk about how you got into animation or voice dubbing and voice work?
Yeah, so I was just a theater kid. I was a theater nerd, and I had gotten my master's degree from LSU in Baton Rouge. And I moved to Houston to make enough money to go to New York. And that was my whole plan. But I didn't know anybody in New York, and I didn't have any money. So I came to Houston to live with family and save money and go to New York. And while I was here, I got hooked up with my agent, who I'm still with, and almost immediately started booking voiceover work, like commercial work and stuff. And loved that. I had not really considered that I would be, that I would do a lot of voice work. But I loved it. It was fun to do, and you didn't have to get dressed up to do it, and I liked it. So there's a place in town, it was called ADV Films, and I got an opportunity to go audition for anime. And I will be straight up with you, I was like, what are we doing? What is anime? what are we doing? And looked around online a little bit, and I was like, oh, okay. So I went and I auditioned. I ended up getting like Girl on the Beach with a Beach Ball in Neo Ranga. And I came home and I said, well, I'm terrible at that. They're never going to have me back. I was awful. And wrote it off. And then a couple of weeks later, that same director, he was new to ADV Films. He was directing a show called Fullmetal Panic. And I got an audition. I was called to come in and audition, which I thought was just miraculous, given that I didn't know what I was doing. And then I booked the lead, and I was really freaked out. I was just like, I don't even know what we're doing. What is it? And now I'm the lead? Oh, so I went online again. Like, it was probably dial-up. It was so long ago. And I was like, what is anime? And tell me about this and what is going on. And I went to Anime News Network. I found all of these fan boards and was promptly terrified that they were going to review the show and know that I didn't know what I was doing. But truth be told, that show started everything. I happened to hit ADV Films at just the right time. They were really expanding. I have a voice that is very well suited to anime. I did not know that. but I started, so that's what happens is you get in and they go, hey, I'm working with this girl. You should give her a try. And it's sort of word of mouth among the directors. I started working a whole lot at ADV. And then I started going to conventions, like Greg and Monica would sort of take me under their wing and show me the ropes and how everything worked. And while I was at a con, I met Mike McFarland, and he said, hey, I've been watching your work in Full Metal Panic. I'm working on a little show called Full Metal Alchemist. Would you like to come to Dallas to read an episode character? You can just record an episode character for me, and we'll just use that as like your audition for Funimation. So I was like, what could I? I would love that. So I drove to Dallas and I did, she was Siren, a thief in episode 10 of Full Metal Alchemist. And that's how I started working up there. It worked out. It was good. I ended up being Wrath in Full Metal Alchemist also later in the series and started working up at Funimation. And that is how it all happened. Like, but I didn't plan it. That's the thing is I didn't see it coming. I just kind of did what I could with the opportunities I was given.
Well, that is awesome. And that does answer like another question I was going to ask, I was going to ask if you were planning to do something like this, because a lot of voice actors, or at least the ones that I followed, they usually tend to try to be like actors or again, like Broadway or theater or something like that first. And then they just land the jobs in animation and then that just takes off with that. Yeah. So I think that's really cool that you get to talk about that you get to share that experience, especially on the podcast here, because I do know like a lot of folks who, because even for myself, when I was a kid, I really wanted to do voice acting just because of like Dragon Ball Z and what Funimation did with the older anime series. And, you know, and being behind a booth and not having to physically act like where they see you, it does, at least I think it makes it easier. But now that I'm older, it does take, again, a skill set to do that, because you have to enforce or emphasize a lot of more emotions just through your voice instead of just physical. So has that been any, I guess, a challenge for you as well, like from the beginning till now, like just trying to make more emotional context with your voice?
I think so. I definitely think that as you grow and you learn a lot, you learn your limits pretty quickly. And so the trick, right, is always pushing past your limit. Like still to this day, every time I am asked to voice a little boy, I think, I can't do that. And then I just do it. Like, I just do it. I don't know. But in my head, that is a limiting thing. In my head, I don't play many villains. So something like getting to do Medusa in Soul Eater was a really big deal for me. She was wonderful. So you're always kind of trying to figure out how to make things sound fresh and sound natural. And that's kind of the thing in our business, is just figuring out whatever the project calls for, whether it's commercial or animation or games or whatever it is, figure out what that is and then try to make your voice do that in the right timing.
What are your thoughts on like on, I guess, especially in anime when they have to fight or do like sequences of screaming and shouting and yelling? I think there was one, I believe it was Sean Schemmel, where he passed out in the booth playing Goku at one point. Not saying has that happened to you, but you know, how do you, I guess when you were first doing that, how was that like?
So it's intense. It is intense. It really depends on what you're doing. Like there was one, probably one of the hardest sessions I ever did was back in the day when I used to go up to Dallas. I would record all day. I would start at 10 in the morning and I would record until 10 at night for different people. But I remember I was doing, we were doing Full Metal Alchemist, the movie, one of the movies anyway. And Wrath sacrifices himself and it is an amazing scene, but it is very gory. And, I was at the end of the night and I just felt pieces of my throat, like, so shredded. It was so gross and shredded and I felt gross. But it can definitely be something. The closest I come to passing out is scenes that have a lot of running. If it has a lot of run, because you find yourself going right, and you do that enough for like a minute and then they call stop and you're all, ooh, wait. Ooh. It's definitely something you get used to it. But it's a taxing, it's a vocally taxing thing. Don't let anybody tell you different. It really is.
With how Japanese actors kind of set the bar with that, you know, it's very, very intense. And you don't really see that in a lot of American cartoons where they're screaming or shouting attacks or like very intense moments like that. So I always wondered how English dub actors would feel about that, because you wouldn't see like Tom and Jerry, like, you know, do like attacks with their bats and shout out their moves and stuff like that.
Right. So a funny thing about like shouting and yelling and screaming and all that stuff. So I heard a director once told me that they could tell a new voice actor by fights and reactions, because normally, because of what you're talking about, like when a normal person is standing in front of the microphone, and it says you're supposed to scream because you're running from a fire, you know, most people will just go, ah, because you don't want to freak out the microphone, or it feels weird to scream at the top of your lungs. But people who are in the know will just let it rip, so that it sounds like really vital, or fighting or stuff like that. We get real good at reactions. Not little like, but you know, you just get used to it.
Now, since we're on this topic of fighting as well, I know Ochako does a lot of that in the series now. Mm-hmm. She's more involved with evolving as a character. Like before with My Hero, she was very laid back. And like you said, she was about the money. And then now with the seasons going on and she's becoming more of a hero. Are there any moments in My Hero of Ochako that you felt like you could really relate to with her character?
I always loved her fight with Bakugo. I loved that. I feel that moment so hard when she's like, I'm almost there. And I mean, ultimately, from the get-go, he was the more powerful person, and was probably going to win no matter what. But she put up a good fight, but she's not there yet. Right. She just couldn't quite do it. So that is probably my favorite fight that she does. Although I'll tell you again, when I was watching the movie and she floated all that stuff and threw it at 9, I did not realize she was that strong yet. And I was so impressed with her. I was so proud of her for doing it. Yeah,
her battle with Bakugo was probably the turning point of like why I liked her character. Because like you said, they could have essentially just written her to be the typical female protagonist or like the typical character. But what Horikoshi does, the writer with My Hero Academia, is like he makes every character essentially a main character. Yeah. And that's what I always found funny was because the story is focused on Midoriya, but I always felt like Ochako or even Bakugo or Ida or any of the
Todoroki,
they all have potential to be main characters themselves. Yeah. And so I always that's why I always liked My Hero, is because everyone has their moment to shine. And again, with Ochako's growth, like just reading the manga too, and just seeing how far she's come, I really do enjoy how more brave she is now versus before. And you kind of just see like the influence that Midoriya has on not just her but the students too. Now, with Ochako's character growth, do you feel like, was there anything that you felt like you could relate to her as well with her character?
Yeah. I mean, apart from the fact that our voices are not that dissimilar. I just sound a lot like her, like naturally. So I also probably would like to, well, I'm sort of a good girl. I've sort of always been kind of the good girl in my life, and sort of chafed at that a little bit. Like I feel like there's more, especially when I was younger, I was like, there's more to me than just whatever it is you see. So I get that about her. I'm also very practical. Underneath it all, even though I'm an actor, and actors can be like, you know, we're creative, right-brained people and all of that, I am a very practical person, the way I live and how I make my choices and stuff like that. And so the more I learned about Ochako, the more I just kind of thought, yay, she's great. I also love about her, what I love about all of them is, the creator has given all of these people so much integrity, each one of them. has this sort of streak of justice. It's like a rightness that no matter who they are, Bakugo has issues. But you can't deny his integrity. I mean, even when he's tried to, you know, they're trying to woo him to the League of Villains, he will not be wooed. Like, no way. He has too much integrity. Like, I don't know what, but anyway, I love that about all of them. I feel like it's something that we all sort of latch on to, no matter who you are. Plus, if you don't like the main cast, there are so many people in the show that you can fall in love with. You know, so many different great characters. The League of Villains is amazing. Toga.
Oh, yeah.
One of my kids' favorites is Toga. So
speaking of Toga, I have a Toga shirt on.
Yay!
Yeah. Lea Clark does an amazing job as Toga. And again, like I've said, the English cast for My Hero, you guys do a fantastic job. And not so much like where you guys are kind of copying, but there are similarities to how you guys portray the characters versus the original sub. So that's why I really like that too. But then you guys have your own little twist to it, which I like that too. And I guess for Ochako's voice, was this something that you were told to kind of already come up with, or was that something you did on your own?
So the funny thing about that is I was not auditioning for new shows. So the short story is after I had my second baby, things got, it was just so, I don't know. I had a lot going on, and I started sort of having panic attacks and stuff. And so I started trying to cut back and like figure out how to streamline some stuff. And I ended up going to Mike up at Funimation and saying, hey, I need to take a break from all the trips I'm taking. 'Cause that's 4.5 hours away from my house. I said, I'm not going to audition for anything new, but I will do One Piece. The shows that I already have, I will do. But I'm not going to audition for anything new. And they worked with me on that to be able to do that. So the reason I say that is because I was not going to audition for anything new. And then I was up there working on One Piece one day, and I ran into Ian Sinclair in the hallway. And he was like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, we're going to One Piece. And I was like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm here to audition for My Hero. And I said, oh, is that what's happening today? And he said, yeah, are you auditioning? And I said, no, I'm not auditioning. And he goes, why aren't you auditioning? And I was like, I'm not auditioning for anything new. And he goes, you should audition for this show. And I was like, no. And he goes, you should audition for the show. And he was just, so I was like, oh. So I went out and I was looking at the sides. There's a binder usually out in the lobby, and it has a breakdown of all the different characters and what the audition lines are. I'm looking at the sides out there, like nonchalant, like whatever. And I ended up going back to Colleen's studio and being like, hi, can I read? Can I read for this show? Just please.
So casually.
Yes, and she was like, would you read for this show? That would be awesome. So I went in, or I stayed that day and read for her. And I think I read Froppy. I read Mineta. I'm sure I read somebody else. And then I read Ochako. And I had a feeling, the way she was kind of talking to me, that she was looking at me for Ochako. And all I remember is her, what I do, directors give me adjectives, and that's what helps me the most. So Colleen was like, so she's adorable and peppy and very optimistic and positive, and just very earnest, you know? And I was like, okay, those are good things for me to work from. And then we watched the scene. I think it was at the beginning when she sort of saves Deku from falling. I'm pretty sure that might have been the audition scene. Anyway, and so I read that, and I think I read it once, like just once. And Colleen was like, okay, thank you. So I was like, this. Yeah, it worked out. It worked out. I'm so glad I'm in the show. I feel so lucky.
Oh, that is an awesome experience. Did you have any idea that the show was going to be as big as it was?
I did not. So I knew, I heard that it was going to be, they thought it was going to be popular, but I've been in this industry for a long time and I've never had a show do this. So I wasn't in Dragon Ball. Now I've been in Dragon Ball. I have a little character in Dragon Ball, but I've never been a part of a show like that. So I didn't know what that even looked like. And I think it wasn't until, I feel like the second season was already up until it really went. And I started going to conventions and seeing people lined up and seeing all of the cosplay and all of the different heroes. And I was like, oh, this is what it is. This is what this means.
Yeah, conventions are huge when it comes to, especially for anime, mainstream anime. Yeah. I went to Cincinnati Comic Con in 2019. I had the opportunity to meet, or I didn't get to meet him, but I regret it. Clifford Chapin was there.
Yes!
And so there was a huge line of Izuku cosplayers. And I spoke about this in one of my earlier episodes of my experience. And they were marching down, had signs, and were like, you know, Midoriya, Izuku. They were just chanting something. And then out of nowhere, Clifford just like, shut up, you stupid nerds! In the Bakugo voice. And I was like, and that's when it clicked for me. I'm like, oh my God, Bakugo's here.
Yeah.
So like, I regret not meeting him. Like I till this day, I really wish I should have just spent the money to just to go meet him because.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. And now with how the arcs are going with, especially with Bakugo, I'm a huge Bakugo fan now.
Yeah. And
I love his development, his redemption. I fully understand his character now, and a lot of folks don't give him that. They tend to give Bakugo a lot of hate because he bullied Midoriya, but then especially in the manga later on, his growth as a character is just so realistic, and that's why I love it so much.
Yeah, he's great. I think I love Bakugo. I think he's a great character. And again, he's a fantastic hero. Like, he's wonderful. He's so naturally powerful that it's almost totally understandable that he would also have an ego.
Yeah.
This huge ego to sort of deal with this super powerful quirk that he has.
And I think people tend to forget that these characters are still teenagers. They're not young adults.
Yes, so, they are kids.
Yeah, so being like, imagine being 16 or so and having that kind of power in your hands. I mean, your ego is going to be huge, and you're going to not care about what people say.
Yeah. But
what were your thoughts, though, in the second movie when he gets the opportunity to wield One For All? What was your thoughts on that?
So that was so heightened just because we were surrounded by fans. I mean, it was our little band of voice actors in the front center of the theater. And then the whole place was packed with fans. And I didn't know what was going to happen because I had not seen that part. I had only watched my own parts that I recorded. So I was like everybody else. I was just like, what's happening? No, like... But we're all like, no. What does it mean? Like, oh God, what? But yes, so I loved it. I loved that whole movie. And I'm just never going to forget seeing it that way with everybody around me experiencing the same thing, like loving it just as much.
Like, I'm getting just chills hearing your experience, because like my experience watching in that movie, again, it was just before COVID, so I didn't have the opportunity to be in a huge theater or at least have a huge audience with me. But a plus side to that was that I shed a few tears watching that movie, so I was glad I was like in the theater by myself. So I'm like, yes, no one got to see me shed tears. But how powerful that scene was when Bakugo just lets go of his ego and reaches out to Midoriya, and then when the music plays, and just it's like a sad moment, but at the same time, like, you see them fighting for, like, they're just doing a one last Hail Mary type thing, and it was just crazy. And so my next question for you, though, Lucy, is if Ochako had the ability to have that one opportunity with or wield One For All, what do you think would happen? Like, how do you think her powers would be like?
Whoa. That is wild to think about. I feel like her first thought process would be this determination to wield it wisely. I think she would be very cautious. Also, because, I mean, and I don't know how much you've seen of season 5.
I'm caught up.
Okay. Yeah. So, as you know, as things happen, and Izuku, various things are coming out with his power and stuff. You know, she's sort of having a front row seat to some of that. And I mean, I had audibly gasped when she sort of threw herself onto him. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
To sort of pull him back from the edge. So I feel like if that were to happen for her, I think she, being her, would just feel a tremendous responsibility to be very careful and very wise about it, about that power. But that's wild to think about. Now I'm going to have to think about what she would, like, do. But
no, but that is a great answer.
She would just be like, whoa, oh my gosh, this is an awesome responsibility.
Yeah.
I hope I'm up to the challenge is kind of what she would do.
I mean, that's a great answer, too, because, like, the reason I ask you this is because you literally voice her. So, I guess with her character, I think she would be very careful with this. She wouldn't be reckless like how Bakugo would be or like how Midoriya would be.
I'm just showing you my dog.
Okay. I knew I saw something back there.
Yeah, she's back here just taking a nap. Okay, keep going.
But I think Ochako would be very careful with that kind of, or at least with that amount of power, especially yeah. with her float quirk being enhanced like that too. So I think she would be a type to be very careful. Now, I'm pretty sure you get this a lot at conventions too, but what are your thoughts on the whole ship thing between Bakugo and Ochako?
Oh, Bakugo and Ochako. So I think that is so funny. And, but you know, I get it. I get why that is appealing. I do think she has his respect, and that is not easily earned. After their fight, when I think it was Ida says something like, how dare you beat up on a fragile girl or some such thing, and Bakugo says, she's not fragile. And it's the closest thing he comes to giving a compliment to anybody. So I think that there is that fun idea that good, wholesome girl would be A, converted to being a little bad with Bakugo, but also convert, you know, appeal to the better part of him. So I get that. I get a lot of fan art sent to me that has them. And I get a lot of Deku and Ochako for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's super obvious with Doria and Ochako. You know, what's funny is I saw someone's video on YouTube where they asked you to respond, like, if she was to confess to Midoriya. And I thought that was one of the, like, funniest but also cutest things ever, because she would react like that to Midoriya, because they both, like, throughout the show, she adores him, but then she doesn't admit it or she doesn't say it. And then when her face turns red, like, you see, like, Froppy and even Aoyama, like, they noticed those things.
Yeah.
And so she kind of just tries to hide it, but then it's so obvious that she adores Midoriya.
I know. And she admires him so much too. You know, it's this genuine thing. But as you said before, that's where it's easy to forget that they're kids. Like, she may be becoming all kinds of powerful, but that doesn't mean she knows how to put two words together about how she feels about somebody. You know, she's still 16 or whatever, 15 or however old they are. They're not even that old. They're still first years, which is so crazy to me.
Oh yeah, especially in that universe where they're going to school to being heroes, and then you know there's again with her being with like the I forgot what it was called, like the, her team with Ryuku and with Hado, you know, like she's with that kind of experienced team.
Yeah. And,
you know, and speaking of that too, with the latest movie being shown in the trailers drop, Ochako has she's on the poster. She might have another big part again. What are your thoughts on that? If you can talk about it, what are your thoughts on those, on the whole third movie coming out?
I'm just stoked it exists. I mean, I've only watched the trailer. I haven't dubbed anything on it or seen anything more. But that's exciting. It's really fun to be a part of a show that people want to see more. You know, they want to see the classes fighting together. They want to see more from all of these people. And so that's exciting. I can't wait. The last movie when we did it, I recorded it all over the internet.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Hopefully it's not like that still. But I mean, with COVID, I think COVID is kind of calming down a little bit. But I do know like a lot of voice actors been doing a lot of work at home. Is that something you've been doing too?
Yes. I put in a studio at my house maybe around 2015. And I did that mostly so that I could do audiobooks and stuff from here. It is right over there. it's just in that closet over there. But I did that so that I could do those things, e-learning and various stuff. I never thought I would record anime from home. Ever, never. I don't have Pro Tools. I don't know. I just never thought I would. But when we went into lockdown, Funimation was, I mean, I will sing their praises all day. Their production team figured out how we could record from home pretty quickly. And it's allowed everybody to keep working. So, I mean, yay. It's not, you know, it's different, but it's worked, you know? So, woohoo.
And it gives you no reason not to work.
Right.
You can't really call in sick unless you're really sick.
That's right. Plus, I mean, yeah, the whole like working from home has not been bad. I love my friends out in California. And when I got to do this fun game, Phantom Breaker Omnia, with my dear friend Patrick Seitz, and I was recording here, I was like, woo, we are in the future, and I like it. This is great. I will take this. So that's a positive that came out of the pandemic, getting to work with people that maybe you wouldn't, because you think, oh, Source Connect is such a pain and blah, blah, blah. Well, when that's all you have, guess what? You learn to work. You do it.
Want a simpler way to record both video and audio podcasts? Then sign up with StreamYard. StreamYard is the perfect program to create podcasts, host live streams, and even do video calls. There are many tools to help you create and design your own personal studio. You can screen share, read live comments, and stream to multiple destinations such as Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. You can also download your video and audio recordings after each session. Follow the link in the description, and once you sign up with the basic or pro plan, you'll earn a $10 credit to use for StreamYard. Do you want to start your own podcast? Then sign up with Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout has helped hundreds of thousands of users to begin their podcasting journey. With easy-to-use tools, you can effectively get your podcast onto many platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, iHeartRadio, and more. You can view stats, create audio clips, and even have your own podcasting website. Buzzsprout also offers ideas, tips, tricks, and tutorials to help you improve your podcast. Follow the link below, and once you sign up, you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card. This will let Buzzsprout know that I sent you and also support Spoiler Force Podcast. Happy podcasting. If you're into anime, manga, or anything that's from Japan, Otaku Detroit is the place for you. Located at 513 West 11 Mile Road in Madison Heights, Michigan, you can find a variety of manga books, anime figures, collectibles, posters, snacks, and even authentic items from Japan. Stop on by to see store owner Matt and let him know Spoiler Force sent you. I guess with conventions coming back as well, especially this, like later on in this year, have you been invited out to any conventions already?
I have. And in fact, I hope Delta, just I hope we all, like, be cool, everybody. Wear your mask. Get your shots. Because, yes, I'm supposed to be at MegaCon Orlando in August and the con in Kansas City in August. And I think I'm going to SAC Anime. And I have, like, a few. There's a My Hero Con, Emerald City Comic Con. I'm missing one or two in there. Anyway, but I mean, it's, like, intense. It's coming back with force.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, like, a lot of it on Instagram. And it's just, like, con here, con here, con here. And not just you, but, like, all the other voice actors I follow. And everyone's being booked now. And it's, like, I can see why they want to rush this stuff back. Because, of course, fans want to come back to these kind of conventions and feel some sort of normalcy again.
Yeah.
But do you miss the convention space at all? Do you miss any of that, like, just meeting fans and
doing
panels and stuff?
Yeah, it was sad to, I mean, none of us have ever experienced anything like that, right? To watch your whole calendar just slide into the trash can last year, and we all experienced that. So that they're popping back up on my calendar is awesome. So cons, I mean, it can be tiring. You go and you spend all of your energy and then you come home, and I come home to be a mom and to work and to, you know, have a family. But there's nothing like it. There's just nothing like cons. And, you know, you've been to them. It's not about us. It is the energy created by a bunch of people coming together who love fun stuff and want to be creative and want to dress up and want to have a good time. And it's just a wonderful atmosphere. Meeting people and having people talk about how the shows affect them is so gratifying. It makes me feel so lucky to be a part of this industry. Because it can be a very isolating experience. I mean, I started doing anime, like you said, back in the day when we did shows and I had no idea who was ever going to watch it and if I would ever, ever meet anybody. Who watched it. I did not get into this definitely because I knew there were conventions I was going to get. In fact, back then, you know, we didn't even make money going to conventions. They would invite you and they would pay for your airfare and your hotel, but you just went, you know, to, and that was kind of a pleasant surprise after I started to know that that even happened. But conventions are what showed me what it's all about. I did not know until I went to conventions, sort of what this community really is and how lucky I was to stumble into it.
For at least for myself, because I've always, growing up, I've always been like a closet anime nerd. So yes. I never really shared with people, or like only a select few would know that I was really into that stuff. And then, you know, especially growing up in like in high school and, you know, during that time, it wasn't as hot as it is now.
Yeah.
So I never really, I guess, just shared that part of myself. But then again, with shows like My Hero and with all the new stuff coming out and with these conventions, it really does bring out, like, I guess you're able to geek out at this stuff without being judged or without being critiqued on or made fun of. And then when you get to meet like the actors such as yourself and you know, I hear stories, or even when I'm waiting in line and seeing the fans like truly geek out, and you can really feel their passion of like just knowing that the actor themselves changed whoever the viewers was, like, perspective or whatever their feelings was like. I forgot which convention that was at, but there was one kid who I think he met Justin Briner. I think this was at Motor City Comic Con. I forgot what year, but I was there. And the kid dressed up as Izuku, and I was walking around, and I just overheard a little bit of it. And he told Justin, like, you know, the way how you portray Midoriya, you know, helped me where I'm at right now. And like, who would have thought, like, just voice acting would affect people so much like that?
Yeah. It is very humbling when that happens to you and somebody's telling you that. It is very humbling. Have you? And Justin, I have to toot his horn. He is so good. Justin Briner is just an angel. I love him.
I guess I can gear this question towards you then, Lucy. Have you ever had any fans kind of reciprocate that towards you at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What are shows that has happened on? There is a show I did a long time ago called Pre-Tier. And it's a great show. It's a magical girl show, and it's great. But for this one girl, it was a really pivotal show. And I was so taken aback by the impact it had on her, and that I got to be some part of that. Definitely shows like Clannad is a big one that people are like, that show just like, and I'm always like, I know, that's the show that makes grown men weep like little babies. But yeah, it's always such a, I don't know, it's always so amazing. We've also had people, like, it's always so surprising when people will be like, I was stationed somewhere, I was in Afghanistan or whatever, and we would all watch anime together. And it was this thing that sort of connected us and gave us something fun to do, and it made a difference. And you just think, well, you know, just the power of storytelling and getting to be a part of it is so cool. So cool. Like I said, we're lucky. I'm lucky. I'm lucky. I get to do this. It's so fun.
Now, I do want to, I guess we're almost out of time here. So I do want to get some fan questions going here.
Oh, yeah.
So I have there's one question you already kind of brushed up on, but we'll kind of elaborate that in a little bit. But one question from Andrew, he says, do you have any input or say on the lines for your character, or have you done any improv, I guess, for any of your characters?
Yes. Most of the time, it really depends. The answer is it depends, and yes. Because what happens is you watch it through, usually in Japanese, and you'll see what's going to fit or if it's going to fit or not. And you learn to just know that. You can read the line and watch it and go, that's not going to fit, or that's going to fit. And then you give it your best go. Sometimes, because I've done this for a while, I will change it on the fly to where it fits. Like add a word or fix some syntax or something so that it'll fit better. Or sometimes you do it and you see it doesn't fit, and I'll go, hey, can I try something else? And they're like, sure. And I change it a little bit and make it fit. So that is definitely something that does happen. That also probably depends on your director. Every director is a little bit different. Directors that have done it for a while generally are a little freer with letting actors play like that. It's just my experience. Newer directors tend to be more like, ah, it's my responsibility, I have to fix it. But yeah, I do ad lib sometimes. One of my favorite ad libs ever was this weird show called Azumanga Daioh. And I played this fabulous teacher, Yukari Tanizaki. Fabulous meaning she's a horrible teacher, but she's so much fun, and she's just bananas. She's a bananas character. And at one point they're drunk in the Korean barbecue place because it's anime and awesome. And those flaps looked crazy. It didn't make sense. And she's drunk. And so the line that was written from the translation didn't make sense. So we went to the translation and it said, and that's why I'm the chicken, was the line, and it's not supposed to make sense. Anyway, so I just ad-libbed. I was like, let me try it. And it's like, and that's why I'm the chicken. Like, I just sort of watched the flaps and made this thing work, and it doesn't make sense, and I don't even know. But every time I think about ad-libbing, I think about the joy I felt when my chicken noises magically fit like a glove. And we didn't even know. We were like, okay, moving on. It fits. But yeah, so that's the long-winded answer. Yes, sometimes you do. Sometimes you do ad-lib.
I think that's great too, though, that you get to have opportunities like that. That way, it doesn't, I guess, doesn't make you seem so robotic at times, where you do get to ad lib and throw in some inputs. That's great that you get to do that for your characters, especially being a dub actor. Now, the next question here, we kind of brushed up on this a little bit, but if you can just kind of elaborate a little bit more, my cousin Michael asks, was there a voice or a character that you worked on that you felt closest to? I know we kind of touched up on that a little bit with Ochako, but were there any other characters that you felt like you really related to that you've acted on?
Yes. Yes. There was this one. I've talked about it. I feel like I've talked about it for years, but it's so good. So this show called Princess Tutu was my first favorite show. I was so invested in that show and in that character because it's sort of three different characters in one character. And each of them are a little bit different, but I was just really invested in it. I loved it. It's sort of this dark fairy tale. It's very dark and kind of tragic, but it looks like a kid's show. But it looks like something Disney would do. Like, it's just so sweet and pretty, but dark. And anyway, and I loved it. And at the end of it, I bawled my, like, ugly cry. There is YouTube video of me crying so hard at the end of it. But that show really bookended a time. I think that's why I connected with it so much. It happened at a time in my life that bookended a lot of things. And so it was just a really emotional thing. Anyway, and my kids, like, that's when I've let my kids see most of it. It's so good.
I like when animes are like that too, where you think it's nice and then it's completely twisted.
Yes. Yes. You're like, what? Oh, this is dark. Oh, why? Oh, yeah.
And then the third and last question here is from Julian Hester. I believe you were on his podcast, What's in My Head podcast.
Yes, I was. Yes,
yeah, I was. I've become acquainted with him. So I actually, because of him, that's why I was able to reach out to you. So shout out to Julian.
That's so nice. Yeah.
So shout out to What's in My Head podcast. He asks, if you could voice any other character in My Hero Academia besides Ochako, who would it be?
If I could voice any other character besides Ochako, Toga is so tempting. I do love Toga. But I'll tell you, for pure comic relief and for the challenge, I would try to voice Mineta. Because I think lisps are hard. I think Brina is brilliant. I don't think I could do better than her, but I would like to try. Because that would be a challenge for me. I feel like I don't do lisps well, and she's just so good at it. And he's so pervy and lechy. But I love him in the show for that. Like, everybody is so good, right? Everybody is so justice-oriented and has so much integrity and is so focused. And then there's Mineta, and he is this relief in the show, and he's necessary. I mean, he sort of exemplifies why I love the show. The message is, you belong. It does not matter what it is or who you are or what your quirk is. There is a place for you. You are valuable and you're valued. Even that guy, right? Trying to constantly look up the girl's skirts and being lechy. even that guy is a hero, and I love that.
One of my cousins told me that he likes Mineta because, not just that, but at the end of the day, he does have hero qualities.
Yes.
And that's what makes him such a great character too, because he does, like you said, he brings the relief in, and he's as a student, he is the complete opposite, but as he still has hero tendencies and qualities, which makes him great. And like you said, Brina does a great job. You know what's funny is when I talked about, like, hearing it dubbed the first time and I heard his lisp, I cracked up so hard. I'm like, they gave him a lisp. I was like, oh my God. I was cracking up in the theater so hard. It was so great.
Right? It's brilliant. And I want to say that when she started working on that, she was really pregnant. So the idea of my dear, amazing, brilliant, talented, trained singer. I mean, Sabrina is so talented. To imagine her hugely pregnant voicing Minetta makes me giggle so much. I just love it. But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't trade Ochako in. I bought this for the premiere in L.A., and I have worn it most days during this pandemic. It's, I don't know if you can see, it's a little infinity symbol.
Okay.
And I bought it for the premiere, and then because of that first step when they're at the school and they're doing all of the tests and she throws the baseball and infinity symbol. It's in the hemisphere, man. It's floating forever. Anyway, I bought this as kind of a talisman. And then as we had the pandemic, it was just like, someday, you know, someday we'll be back. Someday. I have hope.
I think that's great. And you know what's funny is the YouTube comments on that scene are so funny, because they're like one comment said, like, you know, to this day that ball is still floating in the air.
It's out there. It's out there. At the space station, they're like, what is that?
Well, Lucy, thank you so much for being on my podcast.
You are so welcome. Ricky, thank you for having me.
Yeah, this means so much to me, because, again, not just because having you on the podcast, but being able to geek out about My Hero Academia. The show itself has brought so many new perspectives in my life. And I do want to say, you know, I think it was just perfect timing, because not to bring down the mood a little bit, but, yeah, you know, some good friends of mine, their otaku store got broken into earlier this week. And, you know, I did a GoFundMe, and within 24 hours, we met the goal. It's not much, but the fact is, like, this community of otaku nerds and anime nerds came together, and it really did feel like a My Hero moment. So one of the comments from the donors said, you know, we have to be heroes during this villainous time, go beyond plus ultra. And that really just hit me here, and I was getting a little emotional. I was like, oh my God, like, and today getting to talk to you, it just really felt like it went full circle. And again, thank you so much for just being a part of this episode. And, you know, I believe that, you know, with My Hero, it does bring people together. And yeah, just like the students, there's room for everyone. There's room to accept everyone and to be with everyone. And so you get to be a part of that history, Lucy. So thank you much for your work and for your time. And I cannot say it enough, you know, and for anyone who's listening, continue to be a hero and go beyond plus ultra. And Lucy, again, Thank you so much. I cannot
thank you enough. Thank you. I hope I get to meet you in person someday.
I hope so too. I hope I get to meet you at a con. But before we officially sign off, was there any, I guess, last words, or, you know, kind of share your social media with any viewers or listeners as well?
Sure. Anybody who's watching, thank you so much for watching this. Thank you. I hope you're well and that you have what you need wherever you are. If you want to find me, I am Lucy with an I, loves Mike, M-I-C, like microphone. Or my husband's name is Michael, so it's kind of like, I'm Lucy Loves Mike on Twitter and Instagram. And that's mostly where I do stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm on Facebook, but that's the old people platform, right? That's for family and PTO stuff.
Yeah, you got to keep up with the trends now.
That's right. Well, you see, I'm parting my hair down the middle. I'm just trying to, you know, hold on to my youth.
Yeah, and I will have that information in the show notes and the description on YouTube and all that. So make sure to check out and follow Lucy Christian on social media. And make sure to check out her website, too, so you can see all her reels and credits and all that amazing stuff that she has out. Again, thank you so much, Lucy, for doing this. And I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Ricky. Bye, everybody.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow, like, share, subscribe, and rate Spoiler Force Podcast. If you have any guest recommendations, comments, questions, concerns, or criticism, you can email me at rickyvang92@gmail.com or message me online on any of my social media platforms.